The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Steve Batista. He's a group lead at a company called MITRE. Steve, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much for having me on. I did learn earlier that we are, I believe, show 511, which almost is 512. And from my computer science background, I really wish I was a factor of two. but thank you for having me on. You know, I've been working in cybersecurity mostly since about 1991. And what I really see is that things are much more complicated than they were 25 years ago. You know, software needs to be bigger, cover more of the situations. You know, you expect them to cover pretty much all of the contingencies faster and more secure. When I started, you could look at code and zero-day vulnerabilities would just fall out in your lap accidentally. Today, you have to really look hard to find those vulnerabilities and get past the mitigations.
Steve, you're jumping ahead. People, we got to find out who you are, what your background is, okay. and why the heck we should believe a word that you say. Now, as you could probably tell, Steve has a bunch of degrees. He's got two master's degrees and a bachelor's degree. He's got all kinds of experience. Tell us about your background, a little about your education, and how you wound up working for MITRE first, please, Steve.
So my background is I have an undergrad in computer science and an MS in computer science. And then after that, I went for an MBA in marketing. I really think both of those are very important in cybersecurity, and it really gives you a broad perspective. It's not just about the bits and bytes anymore. For working at MITRE, it was strangely enough, I was working at a government contractor, and I contacted a MITRE employee to get some information, and the person was extremely useful. And they gave me a lot of information for free. They spent their own time educating me about one of MITRE's projects that they run for, I believe, DHS, CVE. And I was like, that's the company I want to work for. So the reason why I work there is that the people are extremely helpful and extremely useful.
Good. Bachelor's degree in computer science, master's degree in computer science, MBA. That's a whole lot of power there. If you go to your LinkedIn profile, I visited this morning, and your three skills are security, computer security, and information security. So I guess we're talking about security today, huh?
Yeah, that has been my background for a long time. I've really enjoyed working in that area.
LinkedIn also says you have a CISSP and PMP, so you got all kinds of certificates as well as formal training.
Yeah, I think there's a trade-off there. If you're young in the career, for the certificates, I really think it helps you as a short-term hit and meet some bars of criteria for certain jobs, but I think for the long-term hit, those master's degrees are much more valuable. I found that my MS in CompSci really sharpened my technical thought, and my MBA really helped me broaden and understand how people and organizations work. I think those are very important.
What did the CISSP do for you?
So I think by the time I took the CISSP, I had so much experience. It was interesting to see how they organized that into different sections of material. So I kind of knew it. But from a junior point of view, I think it's a mile wide and an inch deep. It's a very good certification for you to understand generally where are the areas that you can focus in. It's such a big field now that there's lots of areas to focus.
So I have a lot of students who are asking me for advice, people 35 to 40, 32 to 42, something like that, grad students. And so they're looking at PMPs. A lot of them have PMPs, CISSP, but that's a very interesting combination of those two. It's project management along with cybersecurity. A lot of practical abilities in that distribution, isn't there?
So it is. You know, the project management and the iron triangle of schedule, cost, and scope are the three things that they talk about that is very important because security is supposed to support the mission. It's not an end of it itself. So you really need to understand the trade-offs you're making when, you know, you're making those investments in security.
Interesting. So strong academic background, work for other organizations, and how long have you been at MITRE?
So I've been at MITRE now for 9 years. I'm really enjoying it. As a culture of an organization, it's really nice. The people there are nice, and the mission is there. You know, if you want to make a difference, this is a place where you can really make a difference. It's really valuable.
For the youngsters, they may think MITRE is just some company out in Virginia. For the old geezers like me, MITRE has been around since forever. I mean, they're around a long time. They have a very strong reputation. I mean, we all know about what they've done in the past. And there are some people who are listening who may think MITRE is a government contractor, or they may think MITRE is something that invented the MITRE box, or they're just trying to figure out what it is. So tell us about the company, the organization, and its tradition, and what it really does in town here. It's not a regular company, is it?
No. So MITRE is over 50 years old, and what we do is we run federally funded research and development company, contracts for the federal government, for governments. And that puts us in a unique place where we are conflict-free because we do not sell products. It allows us to have an honest, truthful broker relationship with those sponsors that are long-term. Our contracts are very long-term. And therefore, we're not in the mode of telling you what you want to hear to win the next contract. There is a place for for-profit contracting. It is a great acquisition methodology when you're, especially when you're doing repeated tasks, to make sure you can drive innovation and cost savings into those programs. But MITRE has the other part of that, where what we can do for our sponsors is help them look at those responses to those RFPs or oversee those for-profit contractors and bring in innovation that's not bounded by such a tight box.
50 years ago, you were into innovation before innovation was cool, huh?
So, yes. There are early maps of the ARPANET that have MITRE as one of the nodes on it. And in fact, it was in McLean, Virginia, across the street from our current location. Pretty much where the metro, McLean Metro, is. So, you know, that is one of the early spots on the ARPANET.
So, so what MITRE does is it manages very different groups of organizations that are involved in innovation. There's like 7 or 10 of them, aren't there? And
yeah.
So which one are you affiliated with?
So the I am actually affiliated within the Cybersecurity Tech Center. And so what I do is I do work for several different sponsors. I've mostly been on the DoD side and the intelligence side, but I've also done stuff within DHS, and I've helped out some of our other sponsors, such as the IRS and the FAA, because we're a very collaborative organization, and because we're a non-for-profit, people really seem to work well together there. So as part of that MITRE culture, you get fielded lots of calls from across the corporation. A great story is occasionally you go reach out for information, and someone will give you the answer that, well, that wasn't the focus of my PhD. And I go, well, okay, you're close enough. So the expert pool is pretty deep, and sometimes it is amazing. We have a group up in Princeton that's working on quantum computing. You can bring them in and talk to our sponsors about how that would affect cybersecurity and computing in general. It's really great.
When you go to Wikipedia and type in MITRE, you find out you're based in Boston and McLean. So was that the origin in Boston or here? Did it branch off? Or?
So I've only been there 8 years, which is funny to say because people are there for a very long period of time. I think our original location was up in Boston, up in Bedford. And then we have a lot of work down in McLean. Because we do stuff for government clients, we have that co-location. But our Bedford location also has lots of really highly technical people. And because we work really well across the corporation, we have a tendency to source the best person for the problem themselves.
Good. MITRE.org, O-R-G. Very few orgs I've had on. All kinds of .govs, all kinds of .mils and .coms, but a .org. So it's a nonprofit that works with helping agencies in a wide variety of problems. And the specific topic today we're talking about is cybersecurity, and that's your specialty within there.
Yes.
Okay, because I'm slow and old-fashioned, like to categorize things. Okay, MITRE have been around 50 years. It's not a for-profit company, and it's not an agency. It's not an association. It's a not-for-profit. Is that what you call it?
It's a not-for-profit.
Okay.
We run those federally funded research and development corporations for the federal government. And
so if a agency knocks on your door, let's say the agency is HHS, and say, look, we are looking at managing mobile devices. Can you help us with this problem? You may do a research and solution on something like that. Is that a typical what an agency would do to you, or would a company approach you? Who would approach you?
So we usually get approached by government sponsors to ask us to meet their mission needs, and HHS is some, we do work for them also. But if they asked us in the mobile space, we'd reach back to some of both our original research and bringing in, and we'll talk later about startups and academia, and also the practical expertise. We are a very much an engineering company. And so we have a tendency to listen to people's problems and work on them and suggest alternative solutions. So we have a tendency really to be very practical in that area.
Well, good. Now, I think we set up the rest of the discussion. We know what MITRE is all about. We know how it can help our listeners. And if our listeners hear about the company or hear about their initiatives, they can put it in better perspective and understand that it's an unusual organization that helps the government run better. Let's take a break here. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Steve Batista, Group Lead at MITRE. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. Steve Batista, Group Lead at MITRE, M-I-T-R-E. And as we emphasized before the break, it's MITRE.org, one of the first .orgs I've ever had in the studio. Tell me about this .org stuff.
So historically, I've learned that MITRE was the first .org in 1985. So
wow.
We have a very...
call up Vin Cerf. He probably knows that.
So yes, I call Vin Cerf and his thousands of wine bottles that are on the internet.
Each one with an IP address.
Each one with his IP address.
As we know that.
So I don't know if that's his whole spiel of why we're moving to IPv6. He wants to have
more
the ability
wine.
To have more wine. I'm sure he'll laugh if he hears that. We're a very innovative company, and we've done a lot of things early on. And, 1985 is a long time ago, but we were the first .org registered.
Great, great. So I think it's important to know, because a lot of listeners may see the write-up of the show and listen and go, well, geez, MITRE, they're a government contractor. No, they're not. Well, MITRE, they're a training organization. Well, no, they're not. Well, MITRE organization is part of the federal government. Well, it's affiliated, but not. It's really hard to define. I think that's what's important about this interview, is just define what MITRE can do and define what they do for the federal government. And I'm going to use a hashtag here. It's hashtag make better decisions. I think that sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, like I said, we are not inherently government. We don't do inherently governmental functions. And we also don't do things that the government can issue acquisitions for. What we do is we can help them with those acquisitions. We do research and development. We help drive innovation into government sponsor agencies. So, one of our successes is actually giving up work. There's many times where we'll do research or we'll start a project and we call up our government sponsors and say, look, this project is now at the level of maturity that they can actually acquire it through an acquisition, for a for-profit acquisition, and we will help you do that. And that's actually a success to us, that we've helped the government start something. We don't sell products, and we don't compete with the for-profit contractors. In fact, we love to help them make our government more successful.
So the funding comes from the federal government for the nonprofit?
That's correct. The non-for-profit comes from the government from running these FFRDCs. Technically, the FFRDCs are owned by the government. We run them for the government.
Hmm. That's interesting. So when it comes to cybersecurity, you work in the division that just handles that one little silo for them. Is that right?
That's the area of specialty I'm in. Yeah, we're not very siloed because we collaborate well, but that's my area of expertise. I'm not an acquisition expert. I'm not a complete systems engineering expert. I know some of those things. Because we have such deep roots, like I said, in we have such a big pool, I can be a very small fish in that big pool.
Some people will say that one aspect of your task is to act as a bridge between startups and govies. Is that true?
That is correct. So, if the federal government has five or six contractors that they buy everything from, they're going to miss that innovation. So there's many times that we try to, both from academia and startups, bring in that technology and expose it earlier to the government so that they can see what is happening that's new. When I look at the DC area for cybersecurity, the investments in cybersecurity startups are amazing. American University did a study about cybersecurity startups across the DC area. While they felt that Silicon Valley was more optimized for profit, you see DC being more optimized for success. So when a funder gets money in the DC area, they're much more aligned towards success rather than we'll try it out and see if it works.
I've had the folks in Mach 37 in the studio here. Do you work with them? Do you know this group?
So I know this group really, really well. They're a great group of people. I know some of their companies. When I was previous president of ISSA Nova, we had them come speak at our meetings for their first, for their company's first large presentation to a large group. I think it's very important to help these startups accelerate that innovation, not only into the government, but into society as general. I think it's very, very valuable.
What is a Mid-Atlantic Cyber Center? Is that a center that you run? Or?
So there is a Mid-Atlantic Cyber Center that MITRE has that shares information for companies in the Washington, D.C. area. And so that cyber center allows companies to share cybersecurity threat information. There was another one that we're a part of called the ACSC that's up in Boston. And the Mid-Atlantic Center is there to help companies that are not ready to go to a sharing organization that is more mature, such as the financial sector sharing organization, but allow these companies to start to collaborate when they see things that go on. It gives you kind of a herd immunity.
And do you really think these startups are going to share information? Isn't that kind of a vulnerable thing? And you can maybe have proprietary information you're going to release.
So the Mid-Atlantic Cyber Center isn't may not be full of startups. They can be full of people like Visa, who does credit card processing in Virginia, or a larger company like that. But what you do is you see the same kind of attacks from an attacker go across multiple companies. So if those companies share indications, they don't have to share that the attack was successful, but those indications allows them to act as a herd, so that if the same technology or the same trick or the same phishing email is used across all those companies, it becomes nullified faster.
When my wife and I were in San Francisco, we used Uber all the time instead of using a taxi. So what the heck is taxi? What's it got to do with you folks?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So MITRE has helped develop for the government quite a few number of standards. Taxi is a system that we have to share and publish threat information.
TAXII.
Yes. And that threat information is an XML framework called STIX. And so what we found is, through our history, that naming things is very valuable, and having ways of communicating is extremely valuable. There's a thing that we've helped put together called CVE, Common Vulnerability Enumeration. And it talks about vulnerabilities in software. And before MITRE helped develop that, the only way you could talk about a vulnerability is to say the paragraph of the vulnerability. Now there are numbers associated with it. So if an attack comes, you could say it's CVE, 1024-2017. So I can quickly communicate to somebody where the vulnerability is. Those standards are great.
Now, the people who have done any English studies in the past know about the River Styx and taxis and people being ferried across River Styx. Is this the game we're playing here, this kind of river?
So we hope people don't fall into the River Styx and forget everything. That's my history part. But really, the idea is that you want to be able to share this information in a machine-consumable way so that you can share it faster among organizations. Organizations may not decide to act immediately on that information, but because there is a standard of way of sharing and a standard of expressing that information, it's a way that people can share indicators and cyber observable events amongst multiple companies so that defenders can work together.
I go to events all the time, and I sit there and have a coffee and talk to someone and strike up a conversation. So if someone said, tell me, John, what is the Mid-Atlantic Cyber Center? Is this a physical location? Is this a group of individuals? Is this kind of storefront? So what exactly is the cyber center?
So it's relatively new. It's a group of individuals that we're starting to start up so that companies can join and share threat information in the Washington, D.C. area. I find that social connectivity is very important. It allows people to learn and people to share information, very similar to when I was president of Information Systems Security Association in Northern Virginia. I think having that human-to-human contact is a great way of protecting systems because people learn from each other.
And so it's a virtual organization that's based at MITRE.
So I think MITRE is a member of it.
Okay.
It's rather new. Mm-hmm. And there are other people that are trying to decide whether they're going to join or not. It is a new organization. If you're definitely interested, you can definitely reach out to me on Twitter or anything like that.
And your Twitter handle is @SteveBattista, B-A-T-T-I-S-T-A.
Yes.
And so you're one of the few people who actually uses Twitter to find out about cybersecurity threats.
Yeah, I think the social media aspect, especially across Twitter, if you have a good filtered list of experts, can give you advanced notice of what's going on. When you look at things like the recent Petra attack and the fact that it was starting to be discovered that some of those were not recoverable, so it was not ransomware, it was actually destructive malware, that occurred on Twitter. And having that advanced knowledge helps you characterize those attacks, and it characterizes the behavior of adversaries.
That's wonderful. Let's take a break. We'll come back, talk more about MITRE and how you can help our listeners and maybe help govies and organizations here work together to reduce some of the cyber threats that we all face. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Steve Batista, Group Lead at MITRE. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Steve Batista, Group Lead at MITRE. And you can visit MITRE at MITRE.org. So funny spelling and an O-R-G, so it's a nonprofit. And if you want to follow Steve on Twitter, at StevBattista. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I have a funny one. My name is at Ray Gilray on Twitter, and I do a lot of tweeting and keep up with all kinds of odds and ends. And that's why we brought Steve in, to have you keep up with what MITRE's doing and what they're all about. And if they're just another contractor or they're part of the federal government, go back and forth and back and forth. And I think we've explained it pretty carefully. Now, I get people in the studio all the time. Your interview number 511, we start off with that. And I normally ask them, you know, so much going on. I don't know how to keep up with cybersecurity and cloud management and AWS and Azure. So I ask people what they read, if they listen to podcasts or read things. So how do you keep up with all this crazy stuff going on?
So the first thing I'd like to say is this is not a sprint. This is a marathon. You know, you have a career in this. You need to prepare for the long run. And, you know, I do a lot of reading. I'm an avid reader. I read 45 to 50 books a year. Mostly nonfiction. I do read some fiction in the science fiction area if it helps in the cybersecurity area. But I think you really want to think of it as a marathon. Don't burn yourself out. One of the things I think is really important is a good start in your career. You know, one of the things that we really advocate at MITRE is summer internships. And I really see many people spend tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on their education and then decide to stop investing in themselves. Which is I don't think is the right tactic. My advice is that you continue to invest in yourself because you need to be a lifelong learner. I think that's really important.
A lifelong. So I'm an avocation. I like reading books. Tell me about the last book you read.
So the last book I read was actually Compelling People, that dealt with the balance between strength and warmth, and I thought that's very important. So as a cybersecurity leader, I want to make sure that I am helping people achieve their goals. And I thought that was very interesting to as a thought about how I interacted with people to make sure that I did it correctly.
You know, because I'm on Twitter a lot, I see all these tweets and I see crazy pictures. And I saw a picture in France of a woman with an eagle, and they're training eagles to take down drones.
Yes.
And you guys do, you don't raise eagles, but you do something with drones, don't you?
So it's not in the cybersecurity area, but we did have a really interesting challenge where we had several companies come in and test the ability to safely take drones out of the sky. I believe we had that last summer. And so we had a drone challenge. And so one of the ways we drive that innovation is we've been doing some challenges. We had an Internet of Things challenge where we gave network traffic to anyone who wanted it. And if they could determine what Internet of Things devices were on that network, they would win a prize. So usually we run these on behalf of the government. We found that that methodology really does help a lot. We've also worked in several challenges. We were one of the early DARPA self-driving car challenge participants. So we find that doing those challenges really helps innovation.
Is that what the Showcase 17 is all about? Is that what the innovation design? I read something about some innovation. Maybe it's something you've worked with in the past. Maybe I've got it confused with a different company.
That's something I'm not familiar with. I can go back and look at that, but it's not something I'm familiar with.
No, it's no big thing. Okay. I think if you look at MITRE, another three words that hit me, trusted, impartial advisor. It's kind of like an advisor to the government on very specific technical activities. So if an agency is considering something, they can come to MITRE and help them out. And you even work with the smart folks up at NIST.
So, yeah, so one of the more recent FFRDC work we've done is to help run the NCCOE, which allows companies to come in and work with their cyber products in integrating them and help show the federal government how they're providing value in that area. It's very interesting. The NIST is a great government sponsor that obviously National Institutes for Standards and Technology that deals with a lot of technology. Living in the area a long time, it used to be called National Bureau of Standards when I was young, but they've really done a great job. If you are new to cybersecurity, I would definitely look up their special publication 800 list. Great resource for cybersecurity. All kinds of things in that area.
And just for some of our listeners, we kind of use this acronym kind of trippingly in the tongue. It's define it FFRDC again.
Yeah, so it's a federally funded research and development corporation. So we run those for the government. You know, our job is to do that research and development for the Fed, for governments. And really, because those contracts are long-term contracts, we are really a trusted, impartial advisor that doesn't sell products. Our job is to make your mission a success. And we really do work long-term with the government to help them in that area. We have a tendency to be able to leverage people across the government so that, you know, I work in a cybersecurity tech center. I can take successes from one of our sponsors and bring them to another sponsor. And that connectivity is really valuable. It really saves.
So sponsor would be an agency, a federal agency.
Yeah, a federal agency. It really saves CISOs and CIOs and, you know, a lot of money because they can leverage successes or understand how other parts of the government have done things in the past.
Okay, so let's say I'm working at labor and I have a problem with authentication. And so I'd go out to MITRE and go, well, help me with this authentication problem because I have civilians signing out of my network. I've got NGOs. I've got military. I've got a mix of people, and we're having a hard time with authenticating. So they may present with the problem, and then will you select companies to come and try to solve that problem, or what's the step-by-step? How would you help in that endeavor?
So in that area, we have a basis of knowledge for identity and access management that we've done across the federal government, across DoD sponsors, across multiple sponsors. So one, we can leverage our history in that and our experts. Our employees have a tendency to stay with the company for a very long time. So you could potentially get the person that helps set up help DOD work with setting up their DOD CAC card system. Or you can do some of the new emerging identity and access management based on behavioral characteristics of employees that DOD is now starting to look at. So what we do first is really listen to your problem, understand your problem, talk about the successes and lessons learned in before, and then bring some of the new innovative technologies either to do something special or to reduce the cost of what's going on.
So what's your relationship with the federal contractors that are 1 mile from you in McLean out there? I mean, do they participate in these discussions or you just deal with startups?
So I think we've got a great relationship with them because they are the people that do the majority of the heavy lifting in the federal government from a contractual point of view. It is a great methodology as a federal government employee to use acquisition and, you know, to go find for-profits to do that work. We help those for-profits because we release our intellectual property. And we've had some small spinoffs for them to operationalize and make money in that area. So I really think there's a great relationship where we help them be more successful in helping the government.
Yeah, we turn to the topic of startups and innovation. Here's a more theoretical question for you. Let's go up to 40,000 feet. The startup community in Washington, D.C., you mentioned it earlier, startup community in Silicon Valley, how would you compare it?
So from what I'm hearing from the startup people, it is easier to get money in Silicon Valley than it is in DC. But when I look at the areas of expertise, because this area not only has a very long-term computer focus, you look at May East, you look at data centers up in Ashburn, you look at the history of AOL, And also the cybersecurity focus. You look at all the government agencies in this area that have a cybersecurity focus. The strength for cybersecurity in the Washington, D.C. area, Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. is strong, if not stronger, than that in Silicon Valley. We just have that bred into what we do.
Hmm. So that's the comparison. So easier to get funded, and there's not as much venture capital in this area, I guess, then, huh?
Is that what you're saying? So what I'm hearing is that people in the Silicon Valley area are more willing to take a risk on a company because they're going to buy into multiple companies, and therefore their portfolio may do better. So it is harder to get startup money in the D.C. area, but the companies that get startup have been scrutinized more. Hmm. So when you're looking at companies in different areas, some of them will get funding just to be in a specific country or location. Some will get funding because there's a lot of money around. You really want to look at the ones that have a true technological innovation or some kind of benefit. And in the D.C. area, they have a tendency to focus on that.
Hmm. Earlier, we talked about the Mid-Atlantic Cyber Center and the folks up in Boston, the Advanced Cyber Security Center. Local, it seems more local than anything. Now, would one of these be funded by MITRE? Would this be like a small organization within MITRE?
We're just members of those organizations.
Oh, I see.
I think that, you know, we help start them.
Mm-hmm.
It is not our business model to be those, but, we definitely do help. And because of our internal IT systems and our cyber systems, which I think are very good because we actually work internally on our own systems to help our sponsors, we can help other companies in those areas, you know, raise the bar for their cybersecurity. I think it's really important.
Good. I for some reason, I thought it was an initiative from MITRE, but it's really just supported by MITRE. That's good to know. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about MITRE, cybersecurity, and how you can help my federal listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Steve Batista, Group Lead at MITRE. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. A little different show here where we have MITRE, M-I-T-R-E, in the studio. The person here is Steve Batista. He's a group lead. MITRE is kind of unusual because it's not a for-profit company. It's a not-for-profit company, MITRE.org. And as we learned, one of the first .org ever. Yeah. And what they do is they work with agencies and help them make decisions. They act as an impartial advisor in a wide range of topics. And the topic we're focusing on today is cybersecurity and all kinds of ways to learn about that. And if you want to learn about Steve, I recommend follow him on Twitter at Steve, B-A-T-T-I-S-T-A, and find out what he's up to. And what he retweets is probably going to be something very, very interesting in the area of cybersecurity. I teach at Georgetown University in the graduate school there, and I have some students who actually work for MITRE, and they're great students. And I occasionally get invited to sit on stage at graduation. And last year, I was invited to sit on stage, and the graduating speaker was a guy named Daniel Pink. And he gave a great talk, and thousands of people in the audience, he had him spellbound. And in the break here, we kind of stumbled on different topics and talked about. So tell us about Daniel Pink and your reading and what he's got to do for our listeners.
So, you know, I think that's really important in this innovation area. So it's very interesting. So Daniel Pink has done some empirical studies that show when money is the driving force to activity, creativity is diminished, right? So if you are managing a company or you have a contractor that's working for you as a federal government employee and their contractors are only interested in money, they're going to do better at tasks that are repetitive and do worse at tasks that are creative. Please look up Daniel Pink and I think the candle study where he had people stick a candle against the wall. So when I look at MITRE, we really kind of follow a lot of the Daniel Pink concepts. We're a very mission-driven company with purpose. It's very important. Daniel Pink says that's very important for people's motivation. You know, we're really aligned with helping our sponsors and managing these FFRDCs. You know, as I always say, if you want a yes man or a yes woman, that's not what MITRE does, and there are cheaper options. Our purpose is really to have you guys have the federal government be successful. The second is we have a lot of autonomy. We have what we call accountable autonomy, where a lot of people in the company have a lot of self-direction to look into different technologies and different ways they can help the government. It's very important. We're very tender-hearted on our people, but tough-minded on problems.
So let me read between the lines here. So if I'm an agency and we work with you to solve a problem, you may come up with an answer that we don't like.
So
that's not good.
truth to power is something that we highly value. Our goal is not to poke someone in the eye, but we will give the truth and the ground truth. We have done that quite a bit before, and that's very important. I think that's, you know, you don't want someone that'll just say yes and salute no matter what the answer is.
A guy from Philadelphia named Steve Martorella used to tell me that there's the ugly truth or a beautiful lie.
Yeah.
And maybe MITRE can do both, but I think that's the hard part. If an agency thinks they have a solution to a problem with authentication, and they come to you and they say, well, we have this solution. We just want you to double check it or make sure it's a good idea. And you can come back and say, well, tried that before. It didn't work.
Yeah. So one of the other things we have a tendency to do in that situation, whether it be the idea from the agency or an idea from a startup, is help them say, here are the things that you would need to change or improve upon to make that better. You don't want to say, no, that's a bad idea. What you want to say is, the idea, this is the problem you're trying to solve. Here are the strengths and weaknesses of your solution versus other strengths and weaknesses so that you can make a proper risk mitigation, you know, trade-off. It's not our job to make the decisions. It's our job to advise you. We'll tell you the truth, but there could be other characteristics that we may have missed that make that other solution more valuable.
It's pretty obvious, Steve, that I'm older than you. And when I learned all my networking and all my acronyms and took those silly tests and everything else, it was a desktop and desktops, and all the images were different desktops. And I think for my son and for you, when you look at networks, you may see a tablet and a desktop and a sensor and an IoT device and this and that. And you may talk about managing these things. And used to be you'd manage them maybe manually with firewalls, but now there's machine learning that's taking place here. And so this is a way different Oldsmobile than your father used to drive. I mean, this whole idea of machine learning and managing networks with machines, it's way different than what we previously had, isn't it?
So I really think that it is way different. I'm seeing that automation, especially through machine learning, to be driven throughout the organization. There was an old concept in the 90s called the Windows admin apocalypse that somebody did the math and realized that by the early 2000s, the entire planet would have to be Windows administrators to run things. So what you see is this more automation, and the machine learning where the algorithms are developed from the data that you bring in is very important. The reason why I think it's important in cybersecurity is not only will it be used for cybersecurity, but when the concept of computing is based on the data you bring in to develop algorithms, attackers will be poisoning that data, will be trying to poison your algorithms, will be trying to blind you. And part of cybersecurity is going to be protecting machine learning to make sure those algorithms are correct. When that is the thinking that is done, or some of the thinking that is done, that's the area you need to protect, not just the ones and zeros.
There are some smart people I know that say, well, you don't have to worry about poisoning data if you use blockchain, right?
So I think as a tool, the concept of blockchain or multi-party secure computation to have multiple ledgers is really important because you don't want to keep all your eggs in one basket. So what you see in that technology is allow to have multiple people that don't have to be completely friendly, keep a set of books that they can all agree upon. And once again, once that's the underlying technology, how are people going to subvert it? So if you take things like Bitcoin, the question is, if one person does all the processing, is it still distributed? So there's going to be a whole branch of cybersecurity that deals with not only using blockchain to ensure that data is correct, but preventing people from abusing blockchain to make the data incorrect.
And do you think that's what's going to happen with all these IoT devices and the sensors and the mountain of data that's coming in, and it's going to get poisoned? People are going to say, well, what's the answer? Encrypt everything. Is that the answer?
So encryption, I don't think encrypting everything is the answer. That's not the magical solution because you still need to work on the data. There's a branch of encryption that allows you to work on encrypted data, but it's not mature yet. I think you need to think at a higher level, at a systematic level. If the data that comes in is bad, you encrypt it all you want, it's still bad. You really need to think about how the system engineering, not just the ones and zeros, work. So, you know, encryption is very important. It is one of the tools you can use.
So encryption may be just putting lipstick on a pig. As I wrote down, if you encrypt bad data, it's going to be bad.
Right. So, you know, if I have a hard drive that has malware on it and I encrypt it, would you say that that hard drive is safe? No. I've locked a snake up in the safe, and as soon as I unlock the safe, the snake's going to bite me. It's one of the techniques that you can use to do things, but it is not everything.
Where do you see MITRE in the next 5 years, and where do you see the idea of cybersecurity evolving in the next 5 to 7 years?
So some of that we've already talked about, where you start to see these automated systems and blockchain being subverted by bad actors. I see MITRE still continuing in its role to help drive that innovation in our government sponsors. In cybersecurity, I see two directions. I see the direction getting small. I trust less and less of my computer. One chip doesn't trust another chip. One piece of firmware doesn't trust another. I also see larger and larger systems where you're taking a systems view of how to do that security, similar to the blockchain. I have larger networks. I have more machines. I have more things talking. So from a future of cybersecurity, think small and very big.
You talked about Daniel Pink, and earlier you talked about a filter, a list of people to follow on Twitter. Give us 3 or 4 people you think we should follow to keep up on cybersecurity on Twitter.
So I think Joe Klein, which is one of my friends running a company out of Disrupt6 that deals with IPv6 type work, excellent thinker. I think the Gruck is actually a very interesting thinker about how nation states react.
Gruck?
I think it is, Gruck. I think. I don't have the spelling in front of me. The excellent thinkers. I've built it organically over time. And so my advice for people on Twitter is to follow people, see the types of things they say, and if they're off topic of what you want to focus on, then don't pay attention to them, because you can get sucked into that rabbit hole. I think it's a great, you know, it's a great useful tool if you filter it accordingly.
Great. It's K-L-I-N-E or C-L-I-N-E for Klein?
I think it's K-L-I-N-E.
Oh, great, Joe Klein. That's good. That's good advice. We're running out of time here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today was Steve Battista, Group Lead at MITRE. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.